And welcome back to another episode of Leaving the Village and Handmaid's Tale. I am your host, Kathleen Reynolds.
And I am your host, Jessica Goforth.
And today we're going to start at chapter 32. And we're going to go through, I think, probably chapter 35. Okay. But we'll see where we get.
Yeah.
32 and 33 are pretty light chapters.
They really are. It's just a lot of her thinking and thoughts and kind of rambling around in her head.
Yeah, it kind of moves the story along a little bit, but it's nothing really very profound.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go ahead and jump to almost, well, actually, I'm going to go ahead and jump to the end of chapter 32. And
okay.
She is talking to the commander. And he does like to get her into fairly intellectual conversations, because in Gilead, you're not supposed to have intellectual conversations with A, with women, and B, it's gotten to the point where you can't really have honest intellectual conversations anymore.
Right. Well,
because you can really get yourself in trouble for that. Yeah. But behind the closed doors, in his study with Offred, he can have an honest intellectual conversation, and he knows she's intelligent. So he likes to actually get her opinion
mm-hmm.
on things, because he likes the intellectual stimulation, as many of us do. So mm-hmm. they're talking
But he seems to have forgotten that that's not really a thing anymore.
Right.
Like, he can have all the intellectual discussion one-sided with her, technically.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, or that's interesting. But she really can't freely volunteer information or say what she really thinks at all. No matter how right. much he wants to pretend like she is. And I think that that's what's really clear here, is that she's got to pretend, and he wants to pretend like he didn't decimate the playing field so that there is nothing level about it.
Right. And so they're talking about how Gilead had gotten rid of all of the porn shops and stuff like that, and how before Gilead, men had become so overstimulated that they were being turned off on marriage, and they were basically so overstimulated that they were unable to feel. And she said, "Do they feel now?" I say, "Yes," he says, looking at me, "they do." He stands up, comes around the desk to the chair where I'm sitting. He puts his hands on my shoulders from behind. I can't see him. "I'd like to know what you think," his voice says from behind me. "I don't think a lot," I say lightly. What he wants is intimacy, but I don't give him that. "There's hardly any point in thinking, is there?" I say. "What I think doesn't matter." Which is the only reason he can tell me things. "Come now," he says, pressing a little with his hands. "I'm interested in your opinion. You're intelligent enough. You must have an opinion." "About what?" I say. "About what we've done," he says. "How things have worked out." I hold myself very still. I try to empty my mind. I think about the sky at night when there's no moon. "I have no opinion," I say. He sighs, relaxes his hands, but leaves them on my shoulders. He knows what I think, all right. "You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs," is what he says. "We thought We could do better. Better, I say in a small voice. How can he think this is better? Better never means better for everyone, he says. It always means worse for some. And that's the part that I underlined. Is better never means better for everyone. It always means worse for some. And that is the universal truth. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. It doesn't matter if you're talking about something fundamentalist like Gilead or ATI. It doesn't matter if you're talking about social justice. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. If you're talking about evening the playing field, because that means that evening the playing field is taking away the privilege from the people who'd had the advantage to give an equal chance to people who did not have an advantage. So it's just, it's something that so few people really consider. And that everybody needs, really should keep in mind throughout all of life, what better is truly for the common good all around? What better truly makes people's lives more just? What life truly makes the world more just, as opposed to
just better?
Right, just better for some.
Because if the goal is for others, better. I think I understand what you're trying to say. Because if the goal is just to make things better, quote unquote, maybe it isn't across the board good.
Well, it's right. You know? Because with places like Gilead and ATI, the better comes from, it's really kind of, it's the men who have it better. It's the patriarchy that has it better.
Right.
It's the people in power that have it better.
Right.
Whereas if you're talking about issues of social justice, you're trying to take the power and redistribute it in a more equitable way.
Right. Right.
So,
which is arguably better for everyone, in my opinion.
In the long run.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be in the short run.
Letting go of power can be very jarring and very difficult for people. But I would argue that in the long run, that's better too. Like
In the long run, I agree with you.
Yeah. If you hoard power, it's very stressful and very, it's a lot of pressure to have all the power. It's not healthy. It's not good. It's distributing power equally and as possible is the only way forward for everyone.
Yes. And I agree with you. Mm-hmm. But when you're in the, what his point is and what, what I'm getting at here is that in the immediate, when you are trying to make things better, it's never better for everybody.
Right. And I think that what I think I see here is that this is a common thought among people of power. They have an idea that you're not going to like me for it, but you'll thank me later. Like, you're not going to like what I'm going to do, but it's better for you. I promise. It is better in the long run. I mean, it might be worse for some of you, but overall, it's better if I just do this and make you do it. And this is what's, it's a concept that is very authoritarian. It is an authoritarian concept that I think that, he's right in that structure. But what she's saying is that structure isn't something I want. I don't want a world where it's just better for you, for some, and much, much worse for others. No matter how pretty you think it is.
There's no point at which it evens out in this world. In the truly better ends up being a short-term worse and a long-term better for everybody.
Right.
And whether it's 5 years, 10 years, or a few generations, but regardless, it ends up being a long-term better. And what she's saying and what she's, you know, realizing here is that this isn't better.
No.
For the people that are being oppressed, there's no end. Mm-mm. There's no point at which this gets better for the women involved.
They just want them to die off. They want all the undesirables to die off so that they can then create what they think is their utopia society.
Right.
Yep.
So then in chapter 33, she talks about they're going to a what's called a pravaganza. I love the words I she know. Comes up for all of these things. They're so good.
I know. And they're so funny.
She says sometimes it's an entire citywide pravaganza, and sometimes it's just one district of the city, and in this case it's just a district. And the next few chapters are actually about this pravaganza, but they're all of the women are going off to it, and she says that we turn into a more modern building. A huge banner is dropped over its door. Women's Pravaganza today. The banner covers the building's former name, some dead president they shot. Below the red writing, there's a line of smaller print in black with the outline of a winged eye on either side of it. God is a national resource.
Ooh.
Which that really, like, sucker punched me in the gut for a few reasons, actually. Yeah. Number one, we haven't made any bones about the fact that neither Jess nor I identify as Christians anymore, but this actually made me kind of recoil as being very base and being very disrespectful and being almost blasphemous.
Ooh, that's interesting that it hit you that way.
Because God does not exist, you know, it speaking from the paradigm that God does exist and God is an all-powerful being that created the universe, God doesn't exist to be a national resource. So,
to me, that's just like nationalism, Christian nationalism on steroids.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. That's another point at which it got me. But the first thing, and I think it's because throughout the book, they've been talking so much about heresy and blasphemy and equating it also with treason because of this Christian nationalism that's just, it's become a theocracy.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the idea of a theocracy is that you have a nation that is ruled by God, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
However, that makes God the head of the state, not a national resource.
Yeah.
To make God a national resource is to cheapen God.
Yeah, you think? Yeah.
And that, well, it's like oil or
right?
Corn or
yeah. It,
yeah. And it just, or national parks or, you know, anything else that we would consider a national resource, it just absolutely kind of took my breath away because it made me realize here that this is not, this is actually not about, they're showing their true colors here. This is not about serving God and doing God's will. This is about using God
as a
power,
as a commodity,
as a national resource. Yes,
as exactly. A commodity to be traded,
right? Which in and of itself is
and traded,
right? Which in and of itself is extremely blasphemous and heretical. And again, if you do believe in a God that is the creator of all things, heaven and earth and universe and everything therein, and is omnipotent and omniscient and everything else, that,
yeah,
I mean, that's gross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To be quite honest.
Yeah.
And again, that's coming from someone who's no longer a Christian. I read that and I
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Gross.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because again, I'm trying to read this from that kind of paradigm. And if that's the paradigm you're coming from, that's the paradigm I'm reading it from. And both, you know, both you and I are good at doing that.
Yep.
Yeah. And I,
you know, this, that's, yeah.
It just, it does not.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that triggered me in this section right here about them arriving at this pravaganza was that we line up to get processed to the checkpoint, standing in our twos and twos and twos, like a private girls' school that went for a walk and stayed out too long. Years mm-hmm. and years too long, so that everything that had just become overgrown, legs, bodies, dresses, all together, as if enchanted, a fairy tale, I'd like to believe. Instead, we are checked through in our twos and continue walking. I felt that, like,
yes.
Oh my goodness, like, we were that.
I know, in our navy and white.
In our navy and white. At Knoxville, and even parading around the parking lot at Indianapolis Training Center.
Checking in and checking out.
All these adults.
Curfews, yeah.
Yes. Girls marching in our twos, round and round and round. Oh, my goodness. I was just like, oh, okay. All right. Well,
now yeah, very much like a private girls' school.
That's just overgrown.
Just everything overgrew.
Stayed out way too long.
Wait. Somehow, it's like Sleeping Beauty fell under the enchantment and everything just grew along with it. And
well, who'd have thought we grew up in a fairy tale? Look at that.
To reference Stranger Things, the upside down version.
Right.
Of the fairy tale. I only saw the first version, the first season of Stranger Things.
I did too.
I could not, I couldn't get into the second season.
Oh my gosh, same. What is up with
us? We have like the first brain. The first season was riveting in every way, but that's what I would like. Yeah, it's kind of just the inside out.
Yeah,
the upside down version of
a fairy tale.
Fairy tale, and that's actually a very good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because you have this idea of knights in shining armor, which don't get me started on that because that's not even real.
Oh my gosh,
chivalry was not even.
Mm-mm.
You don't want you. Okay, let's
stay on
just
topic
for
dear.
A second. The code of chivalry is not something that you want people to live by. Okay,
no.
Moving on.
No. Moving on.
All right. I deserve a gold star for that.
You do. I'm so proud of you.
Okay. Chapter 34?
Yep. Because they just kind of go on and on and on with this pravaganza.
Oh, right.
Yep.
There's a historian I just connected with on Facebook, and her Facebook, I don't remember what you call it, her banner picture it says, to know a historian is to know a killjoy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's like, so true.
Hi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's bad.
Okay. But right. Moving right Rabbit along.
Trail. Done. Shutting it down.
So that she's talking about how the main purpose of a lot of these pravaganzas is actually a group wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And the description of this kind of makes my blood run cold a little bit.
Oh, it was rough.
So brace yourselves, because yay. Now comes the main item. The 20 angels enter, newly returned from the fronts, newly decorated, accompanied by the honor guard, marching 1-2, 1-2 into the central open space. Attention at ease. And now the 20 veiled daughters in white come shyly forward, their mothers holding their elbows. It's mothers, not fathers, who give away daughters these days and help with the arrangement of the marriages. Which is really interesting to me, because this is like a patriarchal society on steroids. It's become so patriarchal that the men can't be bothered with their daughters at all. So
yeah.
The women are completely, it's the women deal but with their daughters.
A patriarchal society will not work without the enthusiastic participation of a lot of women. And that is what is going on here, is that these mothers are drinking the Kool-Aid hard.
The marriages are, of course, arranged. These girls haven't been allowed to be alone with a man for years. For however many years we've all been doing this. Are they old enough to remember anything of the time before? Playing baseball in jeans and sneakers, riding their bicycles, reading books all by themselves? Even though some of them are no more than 14, start them soon is the policy. There's not a moment to be lost. Still, they'll remember. And the ones after them will for 3 or 4 or 5 years, but after that they won't. They'll always have been in white, in groups of girls. They'll always have been silent. And that was always very interesting about those of us in ATI, about when our families joined, and about where in the birth order you fell in juxtaposition of when your family joined. And for me, I was 13, so I had already done a lot of development before ATI. I had gotten to right up to the point in psychological development of a person. I had gotten right up to the point of developing my ability to think abstractly and to really think of myself as an individual person, and to really start thinking about what do I think about things, and how do my values and how do my opinions differ from my parents. And that is right when I got thrust into ATI, which I will contend 12, 13, 14, probably the roughest years to be thrown into ATI. A little bit later, mm-hmm. you've already developed a little bit of that. A little bit earlier, yeah. you haven't started developing that yet.
Which was me.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're right there.
Yeah.
That's hard.
It really messes with your head.
Because it's mm-hmm. It's like one of those, we interrupt your regularly scheduled programming and then, you know, suddenly change it from, you know, say you're listening to pop music and then they suddenly turn on like polka. And that's what mm-hmm. you're like, that's your new music. Like, it's so complete. It's just so abrupt and so different. And you're kind of going, you're already dealing with all of these huge shifts. And then now you're dealing with all of these other huge shifts. And it's just
mm-hmm.
a big mind screw. Yep.
screws with your mind.
And then the commander in charge of the ceremony says, she's referencing back to a discussion with the commander. And then
mm-hmm. yeah,
he says again, now tell me, you're an intelligent person and I like to hear what you think. What did we overlook? Love, I said. Love, said the commander. What kind of love? Falling in love, I said. The commander looked at me with his candid boy's eyes. Oh, yes, he said. I've read the magazines. That's what they were pushing, wasn't it? But look at the stats, my dear. Was it really worth it, falling in love? Arranged marriages have always worked out just as well, if not better. Love, said Aunt Lydia with distaste. Don't let me catch you at it. No mooning and jooning around here, girls, wagging her finger at us. Love is not the point.
Mm-hmm.
What does that sound like, Jess?
Sounds like a lot of the courtship teachings.
Because you weren't... Whether or not you were in love with the person was completely beside the point. Completely. Yep. And...
You and I were looking up the whole covenant marriage yes. thing. Did we talk about that on here? We talked about that. Privately when we're talking to our amongst ourselves. Oh my gosh, talk about that, because this happened after my time in ATI. I mean, they always talked about marriage as a covenant and being an extra big deal in heaven and with God and all that jazz. But after my time, after I got married and left, they started a campaign or a campaign, I guess, yeah. Like a
program, process. Yeah.
Yeah, to get certain states to actually adopt a different category of marriage onto their laws, their state laws.
Legally called a covenant marriage.
Yes. And you just makes it more difficult to get divorced.
You're not supposed to get divorced for...
Yeah, it's a lifelong covenant.
For basically... any reason. Now, they did give some reasons.
Yeah, I looked it up. It's adultery, basically, is pretty much it. And, like, leaving. If you just leave. Like, if your husband leaves you and he's gone for over a year, you can file for divorce.
Right.
But you got to prove that. And then there's a whole different process. Like, you have to go through a longer waiting period. So you have to file for additional separation period for whatever state does this. There's like three
right.
states
so
that do it.
Arkansas, Arizona.
Alabama.
No, Arkansas, Arizona, and Louisiana. Not Alabama. Right. You would think Alabama, but not Alabama.
You would think Alabama. Arkansas, Arizona, and Louisiana are the three states that have this law.
Yes.
We will be right back.
Then I think she endures verbal abuse for a season, and she endures perhaps being smacked one night, and then she seeks help from the church.
There is a pile of dead bodies behind the Mars Hill bus, and by God's grace, it'll be a mountain by the time we're done. You either get on the bus or you get run over by the bus. Those are the options.
There's nothing holy about writing discrimination into the law, and I am tired of communities of faith being weaponized because the only time religious freedom is invoked is in the name of bigotry and discrimination. I'm tired of it.
Hi, I'm Nate, producer and co-host on the Full Mutuality podcast. Let's talk about inequality. It's everywhere. Whether it's rooted in race, gender, ability, or sexuality, there's bound to be an imbalance in power, influence, representation, and access. On our show, we want to explore areas of religion, culture, and society where justice is needed in order to bring about true mutuality. I hope you'll join us for some enlightening, fun, and at times uncomfortable conversations as we envision a world where everyone can live free from systems and structures that keep us from being truly equal. You can find us on your favorite podcast app or visit our website, fullmutuality.com, to find a list of all the platforms we're available on. Subscribe today, and we'll see you on the Full Mutuality Podcast.
I remember when Bill Gothard was all excited about this idea of covenant marriage and, like, we're going to get all the states to do this and blah, 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 which obviously didn't happen. And it's something that you do have to voluntarily enter into. You don't automatically end up in a covenant marriage because you get married in Arkansas.
No, in one of those states. Yeah, it's an opt-in thing.
Right. But it is basically, you can say, you know, we want a covenant marriage, which means that we can't get married or we can't get divorced for anything other than the most extreme of reasons.
Narrow list.
And so that's...
But here's the thing, like, you're not more married if you do a covenant marriage in one of those states or if you don't. You're just not.
Yep.
It's just harder to get divorced later.
Right. And which, yeah, I have a friend who's dealing with that right now in Arkansas. And it's difficult because they had a covenant marriage and now they're having to try and figure that out. In the ATI world and also just in especially the independent fundamentalist Baptist world, the fundamentalist Christian world in general, where you did courtship or betrothal, love was not really a consideration. It was a bonus, but it wasn't really a consideration. In fact, you were not encouraged to be at all emotionally intimate with the person that you were going to marry until after you got married.
Yeah, I understood that you could get emotionally intimate once you were engaged.
Yeah, it depended,
like,
on
the emotional intimacy was okay as long as you were really committed and it was gonna happen.
But again, like, you're already committed. Like, you're already engaged.
Right.
Like, how do you even know if you want, like, we're not talking physical intimacy here. We're talking basic emotional, like, are they going to meet my emotional, mental, you know, whatever needs? Are they going, do we get along?
Mm-hmm. It's really, really, really. One day we're going to do a courtship episode.
Or a few.
We've been, or a few, or four or five.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then the mothers have stood the white veiled girls in place and have returned to their chairs. There's a little crying going on among them, some mutual patting and hand holding, the ostentatious use of handkerchiefs. The commander continues with the service. And then he quotes first from First Peter. I will that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, he says, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. Let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. Here he looks us all over, or here he looks us over all, he repeats. But I suffer not a woman to teach nor to usurp authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was first formed, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman, being deceived, was in the transgression. Notwithstanding, she shall be saved by childbearing, if they continue in faith and charity and holiness and sobriety. Saved by childbearing, I think. What did we suppose would save us in the times before? He should... tell that to the wives, Avglen murmured, when they're into the sherry. She meant the part about sobriety. It's safe to talk again. The commander has finished the main ritual and they're doing the rings, lifting the veils. Boo, I think in my head. Take a good look because it's too late now. The angels will qualify for the handmaids later, especially if their new wives can't produce. But you girls are stuck. What you see is what you get, zits and all. But you aren't expected to love him. You'll find that out soon enough. Just do your duty in silence. And then Aunt Lydia says, what we're aiming for is a spirit of camaraderie among women. We must all pull together. What? Like... That's what you say when things are particularly difficult. That's what you say when life sucks. That's not what you say when things are good. Like, why would you say that if things were being put in a situation where, or arranged in such a way that everybody was going to be happy and God was going to be blessing and so on and so forth, why do you all need to pull together? Why do you need this huge mm-hmm. spirit of camaraderie?
Yeah. And then it gets down to the section where they're leaving and she says, when it's over at last and we are walking out, Auchlin says to me in her light, penetrating whisper, we know you're seeing him alone. Who, I say, resisting the urge to look at her. I know who. Your commander, she says. We know you have been. I ask her how. We just know, she says. What does he want? Kinky sex? It would be hard to explain to her what he does want, because I still have no name for it. How can I describe what really goes on between us? She would laugh, for one thing. It's easier for me to say, in a way. That at least has the dignity of coercion. She thinks about this. You'd be surprised, she says, how many of them do. I can't help it, I say. I can't say I won't go. She ought to know that. We're on the sidewalk now, and it's not safe to talk. We're too close to the others, and the protective whispering of the crowd is gone. We walk in silence, lagging behind, until finally she judges she can say. Of course you can't, but find out and tell us. Find out what, I say. I feel rather than see her slight turning of her head. Anything you can.
Yep.
So, and that is her, they're slowly inducting her into their resistance.
Yep.
And we should probably stop there, you think?
Sure. We'll have a nice, slightly shorter.
Yeah, it'll be a little shorter, not too heavy at this episode. And then we can dive in on the next couple sections. Yeah. Last third of the book. Or last like quarter, really.
Quarter or fifth.
Like last quarter is left. We got to chapter 35. Boom, baby.
We're getting close.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for coming along with us. feel free to pop in, let us know in our DMs or social medias. Let us know what you think. Thank you for coming along, and we will see you next time on Leaving the Village.
Bye.
Bye.
And that wraps up another episode of Leaving the Village.
If you haven't already, hit subscribe so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. Also, check out our social media pages at Leaving the Village Pod on Instagram as well as Facebook.
We will post behind-the-scenes photos, links to more information, and sneak peeks at upcoming guests. Message us with your stories and you might be featured on a future episode. Also, if you love the show, rate and comment on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps a lot.
Speaking of helping us, you can actually sponsor our show on Patreon, which also gets you access to exciting exclusive content. Our show is written and produced by me, Jessica Goforth, and Kathleen Reynolds. Special thanks to our families who are so supportive of this show, and to you, our fans. Thank you so much, and see you next time on Leaving the Village.